is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So really, the rippling effect is quite large and has been exacerbated by both climate change-related drought and heat waves and also COVID.
Alex Smith, a food and agriculture analyst, on the conflict in Ukraine affecting the food security in Africa. Details coming up. Also, medical officials are saying death from malaria is rising around the world, and these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The war in Ukraine is reverberating around the globe, sending food and energy costs skyrocketing, with Africa hit particularly hard. Alex Smith is a food and agriculture analyst at the Breakthrough Institute in Berkeley, California. Before the war started, while Russia was still threatening Ukraine, Smith wrote an article entitled "A Russian-Ukraine War Could Ripple Across Africa and Asia." Well, ripple it did, and there is no end in sight. I started by asking Alex to what length the Ukraine conflict has so far affected the African continent.
Ukraine and Russia are both massive producers and exporters of grains and seed oils. Ukraine is the fifth largest exporter of wheat in the world, and Russia is the number one wheat exporter in the world by total volume, at least they were in 2020. Ukraine and Russia are also massive exporters of sunflower oil, corn, safflower oil, different kinds of grains as well, barley and millet, for example. In Africa specifically, there are a number of countries that are extremely dependent on Ukraine and Russia's wheat and sunflower oil exports. Eritrea, for example, is dependent on Russia and Ukraine for about 100% of their wheat consumption, their total wheat supply. Somalia is about 90%, and then countries like Madagascar, Egypt, Namibia, and Tanzania are also massively dependent on Ukraine and Russia for wheat. Similarly, Algeria, Egypt, Sierra Leone, Cote d'Ivoire, and Sudan are also very dependent on Russia and Ukraine for sunflower oil deliveries and supply. So when the war broke out and trade through the Black Sea was halted and has remained halted or at least limited since the war, so it's been now, it's been three months. There are so really, the rippling effect is quite large and has been exacerbated by both climate change-related drought and heat waves and also COVID and sort of supply chain shocks from COVID. We're still early on in this process. I think there's some concern that this could be a multi-year sort of response. The rippling effect could go on, but I think we still have a long way to go before we sort of know the extent of the crisis, the extent of hunger and food distribution caused by the war, at least this like sort of tangentially caused by the war.
You just painted a very bleak picture, Alex. Is there any prospect for economic growth?
Like there seems to be limited growth expectations in the next few years, especially in the larger economies. Like South Africa, Nigeria, and Angola. But the growth rate is staying fairly, it could stay fairly steady from before the war. But as inflation in like the West has become a big part of news, and one piece that's sort of ignored in all of this is that inflation in a lot of countries in Africa is actually worse than in the United States. So for example, the U.S. in May 2022 saw about an 8.6% inflation rate, whereas countries like Sudan saw a 245% inflation rate, or that's the projected inflation rate for 2022. Zimbabwe and Ethiopia are also seeing really high inflation, as well as Angola, Ghana, and Nigeria. So it is a bleak picture.
That was Alex Smith, a food and agriculture analyst at the Breakthrough Institute. He talked to me from Berkeley, California. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says his country will support the development of clean energy among Commonwealth nations, announcing a package with the potential to create over 180,000 jobs and cut carbon emissions.
Over the next 5 years, the Commonwealth's total GDP is forecast to rise by nearly 50% to $19.5 trillion. And these are the markets, super fertilized markets that will power growth and prosperity and create jobs in our countries and at the same time help to ease those pressures that we all face on the costs of living.
Johnson made the comments at the Commonwealth Business Forum in Kigali, Rwanda today. Tomorrow, the heads of Commonwealth governments and their representatives hold their executive session. In his speech today, Johnson praised the creation of Africa's Free Trade Association.
Fantastic to see the birth of the African Continental Free Trade Area. Isn't that going to be a wonderful thing? And it's going to be the biggest in the world. The biggest in the world, 1.3 billion people, promising to lift 30 million people out of poverty and generate $450 billion for African nations, which, by the way, is far, far, far more than Africa could ever receive in development aid.
Johnson also stressed the importance Britain puts on the Commonwealth, an association of 54 nations, most of them from former British colonies.
What I feel so strongly about the Commonwealth is it's not just about the imports and the exports. It's about the partnerships that we build. It's about doing more together to ensure that everyone prospers from the new green industrial revolution. I saw some of you, I'm proud to say, at the Africa Investment Summit in London in 2020. Remember that? Just before COVID struck. A moment of real optimism. Well, I want you to know we're doing the same again next year.
He pledged that British international investment would spend nearly $196 million into developing hydropower in Africa, including Rwanda. Earlier today, Johnson said he would defend his government's agreement to send asylum seekers to Rwanda should Prince Charles, the heir to the British throne, raise the issue when they meet. The plan has been put on hold because of court challenges. Human rights and refugee advocates have criticized the plan. The Commonwealth head of government's meeting runs until Saturday. During the executive sessions, the heads of government are expected to approve applications by Togo and Gabon, both former French colonies, to join the organization. Togo's foreign minister told Reuters News Service his country expected membership to expand the country's diplomatic, political, and economic network. On the sidelines of the Commonwealth meeting, medical officials said with a focus on COVID-19, distracting from efforts to fight other diseases, deaths from malaria rose in 2020 to 627,000 around the world, the highest in a decade. Africa accounted for the overwhelming majority, 91%, in 2016, disrupting lives, families, and futures. Malaria and other neglected tropical diseases were the topic of a meeting on the sideline of the 26th Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Kigali this week. Eugene Wimana is covering the story.
One day she fell sick. It was, of course, malaria.
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie is an acclaimed Nigerian novelist. She's narrating how malaria forced her to miss some math classes, affecting her educational achievements. She urged the leaders of the Commonwealth member countries to do everything in their power to put a stop to malaria.
It does not have to be like this. We can eradicate malaria and other neglected tropical diseases.
Unfortunately, Dr. Ren Mingui, Assistant Director General in charge of communicable and non-communicable diseases, at WHO says responsible parties are failing to step up initiatives to keep malaria at bay.
But we are off the track. We are off the track to achieve the 2030 malaria target for Commonwealth countries and the 2030 global malaria targets. Public health targets set out in the NTD roadmap 2021 to 2030 are also at risk. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken us further off track.
He suggests some solutions.
Integration. We need to ensure the malaria and the NTD interventions are well integrated into primary health care and the universal health coverage agenda. Innovation. We need to promote development of new tools as well as the more innovative means to deliver them.
Rwandan Health Minister Dr. Nanie Ngamije also stressed the importance of establishing new ways of combating the disease that are shock responsive to other health emergencies that are paralyzing health systems.
Sustained investment in medical innovation, new technologies such as vaccines, drugs, and the next generation of insecticides.
Participants at the malaria summit say COVID-19 aggravated the situation, drawing our focus to fighting it, stretching health systems, and largely suspended initiatives of controlling malaria. Now, poor people, in particular around the world, are bearing the brunt. Leaders of the Commonwealth member countries say successes in fighting diseases like sleeping sickness and Guinea worm disease, which plagued humanity for centuries, give hope that malaria can be defeated too. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
After 4.5 years of investigating the so-called state capture corruption case in South Africa, the final report has been released. The sixth and final leg of the report was released yesterday, describing President Cyril Ramaphosa's testimony as confusing and concerning. The report also added several names to the list of people who should be investigated by the National Prosecuting Authority for involvement in state capture and corruption crimes. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Raymond Zondo, chair of the investigative commission, questioned Ramaphosa's plea of ignorance when confronted with evidence that some of the money received by his campaign for presidency of the ruling African National Congress came from people linked to corruption. Zondo says it was Ramaphosa's duty to know who made donations. The report also found that Ramaphosa did very little to fight corruption when he was former President Jacob Zuma's deputy. Zondo says there was no evidence that Ramaphosa fought corruption from within the government, as he claimed. Some of Ramaphosa's appointments to the State Security Agency were heavily criticized. The commission questioned why Ramaphosa distanced himself from the corrupt actions of public officials deployed by the ANC to government when he headed the party's deployment committee. Ramaphosa has not yet responded directly to the findings. This is what he said when he received the report yesterday.
He could have made a negative finding against me, which I will accept. I will, within 4 months, be able to present to Parliament full implementation plan in terms of what we are going to do.
The report also recommends that Zuma's son, Duduzane Zuma, be investigated for being the facilitator of corruption allegedly committed by the Gupta family. Two of three Gupta brothers who allegedly were heavily involved in state capture have been arrested in Dubai. The government is pursuing their extradition. Zondo has also recommended dozens of individuals for prosecution, including former cabinet ministers, public servants, and executives of state-owned enterprises. Sibusiso Mwabe from the African Transformation Party told VOA he is skeptical about concrete action resulting from the report.
I do not believe that the president should receive this report. He was a witness, and above all, some people wanted to cross-examine him. They were not given a chance. This report should have been taken back to the Office of the Public Protector.
ANC spokesperson Pule Mabe told VOA that the party should not be blamed for crimes committed by members.
When an individual member of the African National Congress is accused, they are accused in their own individual capacity. When you do wrong on your own. You don't do wrong on behalf of the party.
Legal expert Ofemenze Sbanda explained to the media that what happens next is the crucial issue.
There is a soft obligation on the NPA to follow up on this process because some of the recommendation does not give a mandatory instruction for the NPA to do this and do that.
Others want the entire electoral system to be changed so those holding public office are accountable to the electorate, not their political parties. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
South African legal experts say the country's main opposition party is within its rights to approach the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, to pursue information about millions of dollars stolen from President Cyril Ramaphosa's farm in 2020. But several forensic investigators have told VOA that the FBI is unlikely to become involved, as to do so would be seen as interference in another nation's affairs. The Democratic Alliance, the DA, took the steps this week as the robbery belatedly became public. Ramaphosa insists the money was from sales of rare game animals, but has acknowledged he did not officially report the crime. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa's former head of intelligence, Arthur Fraser, says Ramaphosa covered up the robbery because the money stolen from him, at least $4 million, was dirty. The president denies this, but says he'll only explain himself more once a police investigation into the affair is over. Like many South Africans, DA leader John Steenhuisen doesn't trust local police to tell the truth about the matter, so he's contacted one of the world's premier law enforcement agencies.
It relates to the use of United States dollars in transactions that have crossed borders, and we want to enlist the help of the FBI in tracking down where those dollars came from and how they ended up in South Africa.
Fraser says the U.S. currency was stolen from inside a sofa where it had been hidden at Ramaphosa's ranch. The president says he's never stashed money inside furniture. Steenhuisen says it's in the interests of the FBI to investigate the source or sources of the cash, since it's possible that U.S. citizens are involved in money laundering in Southern Africa.
The suspects, who are now no longer under dispute, use dollars to purchase vehicles, properties, dental equipment, and a whole variety of other consumable goods using dollars. Namibian authorities uncovered dollars when they apprehended the suspects in Namibia. So it's very clear that the suspects were running around with large amounts of U.S. currency, which would not have been readily or easily available to them in the ordinary course of business in South Africa.
Namibian police said they had no choice but to free the suspects in June 2020, 4 months after the robbery, as South African police refused to confirm that a crime had happened on Ramaphosa's farm. According to Fraser, the president then illegally sent his bodyguards to apprehend the alleged robbers, who are Namibian citizens, and return them to South Africa. They were then allegedly tortured, forced to return the remaining money, and bribed to stay silent about the matter. Ramaphosa has described this version of events as nonsense. Steenhuisen told reporters after sending his request to the FBI that maybe it's able to sift the sense from the nonsense, given that the South African Police Service, the SAPS, seems unable or unwilling to.
The fact is that this robbery took place 2 years ago, and we are no closer to knowing what the SAPS have done or not done. What we've also noticed is that the president has no faith in the SAPS. If he had had faith in the SAPS to get to the bottom of the situation, he would have reported it to the SAPS and got a case number. He would have then made an announcement that the police had investigated.
The DA specifically wants the FBI to find out whether any U.S. citizens brought millions of dollars into the country, legally or illegally, to buy Ramaphosa's animals. American game breeders sometimes visit the president's ranch. So far, there's been no response from the FBI as to whether they're considering an investigation relating to Ramaphosa's dollars. But forensic investigator Paul O'Sullivan says it's extremely unlikely the FBI will probe a foreign nation's president. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington, and please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has for the first time sent a delegation to Europe to try to encourage well-off Cameroonians living there to invest back home. But members of Cameroon's diaspora say undemocratic practices and corruption in Biya's government put off investors. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Government officials say a delegation led by Youth Affairs and Civic Education Minister Mununa Futsu was dispatched to Germany this week to ask Cameroonians there to invest in their country of origin. Futsu said his wish is for all Cameroonians in the diaspora to put aside their differences and help develop Cameroon.
The head of state reiterated his call to the Cameroonian diaspora to come and build Cameroon. He sees this opportunity to come and exchange with the whole Cameroon diaspora here in Europe so that we can present the different opportunities offered by the President of the Republic and his government so that the Cameroonian diaspora can come back and participate in the development of the nation.
Futsu said the government will offer tax exemptions of up to 40% for diaspora investments in Cameroon and loans of up to $10,000 with no interest rates for diaspora youths who return to invest in agriculture and livestock. Kennedy Tuminta is a Cameroonian investor who lives in Germany. He says many in the diaspora find it hard to trust promises made by their government. He says corruption, high taxes, and a lack of confidence in President Biya, who has been in power for 40 years, scare investors.
Freedom is restricted and they are afraid to move around in Cameroon and do their businesses and speak freely. Most diasporas believe that the widespread corruption when it concerns opening businesses in the country or the Northwest-Southwest crisis is not being taken into consideration seriously by the government in place. It makes them frustrated, and the only way to express these frustrations is either to withhold their investment in the country or attacking the head of state.
Separatists have been fighting to carve out an independent English-speaking state in mainly French-speaking Cameroon since 2016. The UN says 3,300 people have died in the fighting. Some disgruntled Cameroonians in the diaspora have become hostile to the government, and at least 7 Cameroonian embassies have been attacked or ransacked since January 2020. Felix Mbayu is a top official with Cameroon's Ministry of External Relations. He says Cameroonians taking part in such protests are hurting the country's image.
Those who left Cameroon unhappy and have not been able to make it there are those who would speak ill of Cameroon. Those who left Cameroon to better their lot in life and who have made it there are those who come back to invest in Cameroon. That's why you see medical doctors who have built hospitals, built clinics, bring back home medical supplies. You don't see them in the idle marches abroad. In fact, when you talk ill of your own home, you tarnish your own image.
An estimated 5 million Cameroonians live abroad. The government says the largest diaspora population is in Nigeria, where about 2 million live. There are also high concentrations in Belgium, France, Germany, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.